9:25 is our time, 41 degrees on this Thursday, April the 9th, 2020. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Dusty is in. Dusty, anything local sports-wise? Yeah. I know you mentioned Mid-Continent League, all league teams yesterday.
Yeah, I want to get to the senior athlete spotlight here real quick. And today our senior athlete spotlight is Osborne Bulldogs seniors and Vaughn Stoll and Ryan Brown. That's brought to you each week by NCKSSports.com, Cunningham Telephone and Cable. Stoll was instrumental to the success of both football and basketball teams throughout the past couple seasons, but really elevated his game as a senior. He's a first-team all-district receiver in football and had 3 touchdowns receiving, 123 yards, and also had a great year defensively with 52 tackles and 4 picks. And Osborne went 13-0 and won the 8-man Division II state championship on the hardwood. Stoll averaged 12 points, 4.5 assists, 3 rebounds, and 2.5 steals a game. Shot 50% from the floor, 42% from beyond the arc. He was third-team all-MPL selection as part of that team that went 19-1. Ryan Brown, also a solid year for the Lady Dogs, 2019-20 on the volleyball court in the fall, a second-team all-NPL pick for the second straight season, and she followed that up with a great season on the basketball court, 13 all-NPL pick for the second year in a row. She contributed in all areas, averaging 9.5 points, 8 rebounds, 3.5 steals, and 2.5 assists a game, shooting 46% from the floor and 63% from the free throw line for the 15-9 sub-state runner-up Lady Bulldogs. So Brown also excelled in track and field throughout her career, and she's actually set to attend and compete at Fort Hays State in track and field. Her specialty has been the javelin, placed 3rd in 1A state as a sophomore, 4th as a junior in the same event. So again, those are our senior athlete spotlight from the Osborne Bulldogs, Juan Stoll and Ryan Brown. If you missed it, you can check it out at nckssports.com. You can go back and look at the past senior athlete spotlights as well.
All right. Well done. And, yeah, just catch that later. If you didn't catch all that with Dusty, just tune in a few seconds ago, nckssports.com, as he said. Hey, tomorrow is when we're going to give away. It's up to $120. We have an anonymous donor with $100 of cash that wants us to give it away. I know that person's a sports fan, so I thought it'd be appropriate we give it away during the sports ticket, which we're going to do tomorrow, around 9:10, about 9:15, whatever, somewhere in that realm, tomorrow. But I have another listener that said they want to add 20 to the pot of their cash.
Yes.
So now we're the 120.
There we go.
So now I'm just sitting here going, I don't know, can we get it up to 200?
Yeah.
So if anybody's out there that wants to donate some money, as these two gentlemen have, for us to give away, we'll probably have a sports. It doesn't have to be, but it probably will be a sports related trivia question coming up tomorrow for someone to win right now $120 in cash. Now remember, whoever wins, if you really need it, that's great. Then take it,
absolutely,
use it.
Yeah.
If you really need it, if you know of somebody that needs it more than you do, maybe that's the reason you're going to try to win. That's awesome. So then you can give that to somebody or a family or a family member or a friend, or perhaps it's an organization that you know could really use it. $120 can go a long way. And that jackpot, as I call it, might be higher tomorrow once we get some other people maybe to add to that number. So if you're out there and you want to add to it, we can arrange to, yes, I know it sounds crazy, grab your money, but give it to somebody in need. Now, if you don't want to do that, that's fine. Here's what I would also encourage you to do. Just do it on your own. You don't need us to do it.
Yeah.
If you want to do it on your own and help somebody out, whether it's by going over and taking care of their yard, whether it's going over and cleaning their gutters, cutting down some tree limbs for somebody, whether it's help take out the trash, do some chores for them, whatever it may be, or if you want to donate money or help somebody out or pay for a car repair, whatever you want to do, I encourage you folks to do that. All right? No matter who you are, I encourage you to do that. If you know somebody that's less off than you are and you can help them out, I encourage you to do it.
Absolutely.
So if you want to add to us, you can, or you can do it on your own. That's perfectly,
yes,
fine. So tomorrow we'll give away at least $120 in cash to somebody that hopefully can really use it. Because the people that are unemployed, we've got people that have had hours cut back. I talked to somebody recently where her hours were cut back and she has a couple of kids and she's a single mom. And that's tough. I also know of somebody that is trying to make ends meet, trying to pay the bills, going month to month the best they can. They have they're taking care of their significant other who has all kinds of health problems,
mm-hmm.
And also trying to raise children at the same time, believe it or not. So there are lots of people that could use that $120, so we will give it away tomorrow.
Yes. I've really enjoyed how generous people are being right now.
Because
it's you just kind of look at some of the things that are going on around the area and the state, and you see these things, and it's
overwhelming. There's so many negative stories, and we need to hear more of the positive stuff.
Absolutely.
And that's why we have our Good News of the Day, which you can share that at our Katy Country 94 Facebook page. All right, let's jump into the sports here before we get to Gene Katy. Let's start with the baseball today. You know, baseball, we should be about 2 weeks into the season. Would have started March 28th, I think, or 29th, something like that, late March. And instead, they're hoping maybe to go back, do some spring training here soon, maybe, and then have a season. It might start out in Arizona. All the teams will play down in the spring training facilities in Arizona, which I think is going to be very difficult. I don't see how it's going to work, but perhaps it will. CBS Sports .com put out a story, and we heard about this last year with Major League Baseball, that a lot of teams seem to be tanking. Teams that are trying to do what the Astros did, be really bad for a few years, stockpile draft picks, and then when you get them all developed at the Major League level, now you can go get a Justin Verlander. You can make a trade and get a Garrett Cole at some point. You can enhance your chances of winning and piece it together. And obviously, it worked for the Astros. Of course, they enhanced their chances of winning by stealing.
They're gonna get them all together and then start banging on trash cans. Right. I thought that's where you're going with that.
Yeah, and stealing signs. Yes, absolutely. No doubt about it. So maybe that's what these teams need to do, is cheat more. But there are 10 teams supposedly in the rebuilding phase. Now, you think about it. Major League Baseball has, what, 30 baseball teams,
30,
right?
Yeah.
So that's exactly 33%. One-third of Major League Baseball has teams that aren't that great, organizations that are in rebuilding mode. So you wonder how teams – what last year was the record for the most teams with over 100 wins. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, why is that? They beat up on the bottom feeders.
Yeah.
And the bottom feeders are teams that may be tanking or are just trying to rebuild. I don't think the Royals are tanking. I don't think the Royals were tanking last year. I do think there are teams that have been tanking. The Marlins come to mind right off the bat. So CBSSports.com put together an article here by RJ Anderson about the 10 teams that are clearly in rebuild mode. He's not saying tanking, but rebuild mode. And he ranked the 10 in regards to who is in the best position to turn things around and become a playoff contender. Are you with me?
Yes.
There are 10 teams. I'll just mention them randomly. The Pirates, the Royals, the Tigers, the Orioles, the Marlins, the Rangers, the Mariners, the Blue Jays, the Padres, and the White Sox. All 10 teams, they're not doing very well right now.
Yeah.
The Baltimore Orioles had most losses of anybody last year. Royals lost over 100. Tigers are no good. White Sox haven't been good. Padres aren't as good, even though they spent a lot of money on Hosmer and a few others, Machado. The Blue Jays weren't great. The Rangers, I don't think of them as a rebuild per se, but I guess they are. The Mariners started out so great last year and then just fell on their face. The Marlins, no doubt, were tanking. The Pirates, they've gotten rid of a lot of their guys and stars that they used to have. So of all the teams, of those 10 teams, I know it's be hard because Dusty doesn't, I think, follow these other teams as much, obviously, as the Royals. I don't follow these teams as much as the Royals, but I do follow Major League Baseball fairly closely, although, obviously, this year there's not much to follow. Of those 10 teams I mentioned, who do you think is in the best position of those rebuilds to contend very, very soon? Which one of those 10 do you think? I'll give them to you again. Mariners, Marlins, Pirates, Royals, Tigers, Orioles, Rangers, Blue Jays, Padres, White Sox. Who do you think's in best position? That's my first question.
I would feel like it'd be like the Mariners or maybe the Blue Jays. With some of their young talent.
Okay, and then where do you think the Royals would rank out of those 10 teams?
I would
teams?
Say somewhere in the middle.
Okay,
maybe 6-7. Actually, maybe
6-7.
Yeah,
okay,
somewhere around there.
All right. So when I saw the headline for this article, I knew there were 10 teams. My first reaction was the Royals are going to be near the bottom. They're going to be, I figure they're going to be 8, 9, maybe 10.
Yeah.
I figured they'd be at the bottom. I wasn't thinking anything better than 7. That's just me, because we've talked about it over and over and over. The minor league system isn't loaded with talent.
Yeah.
They're having to draft a whole bunch of pitchers. They do have some decent pieces at the big league level, as we know. We'll go through that in a moment. So, they rank the Royals on this list at 8.
Okay.
They rank them at 8. You had them at 6-7, so close. The Royals are 8. Number 1 on this list, who did you say? The Mariners, maybe, or the Blue Jays?
Blue Jays, maybe.
Okay, they've got the Padres.
And the Padres are in my mind, but they just
that's who I would think about mainly because they've got Hosmer, Machado, they can build around them.
And the Padres are in my mind, but I'm still thinking like, man, they're spending a lot of money. Do they have enough to get people around them?
But here's the thing: what they did, and remember when they signed Eric Hosmer, they weren't very good.
Yeah.
But they said they wanted somebody to lead their young guys once they come up to the system. And they had all kinds of money to spend because they're not spending on a lot of guys. And so my thought process was, you know, Hosmer could be on part of a team that makes it to the World Series, the Padres, if things fall right. Then they got Machado, spent a lot of money on Machado. Uh-huh. So my thinking is, if you got Machado and you've got Hosmer, Machado's played in the playoffs before with Baltimore, and so you got and the Dodgers. You got Machado and you got Hosmer. Now, you can talk about they spent a lot of money, but if those are the two main guys they're spending money on, they're counting on the rest of these young guys that come up. They'll be playing major league minimum, and you can afford to have another veteran or two. I'm sure, they have them. That would make sense. So the Padres right now have Hosmer and Machado, and they've got a farm system that is loaded. And so they've also traded for a couple of veterans and Trent Grisham and Tommy Pham, and they're trying to piece things together and put it all together. I don't know if you want to say lightning in a bottle, but have that window, just like the Twins had, the Royals have had that window, and so forth and so on. Padres are number one on the list. Number two is the White Sox, which the White Sox always seem to be rated as they're going to turn it around. They never do. Yeah. So I'm not sold on the White Sox, but they have re-signed a lot of young guys for the future. To where they're under contract.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they don't pan out, that doesn't work. The Blue Jays are third. You mentioned the Blue Jays. They have Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette. Of course, they're sons of great major league players.
Biggio, is he still
Biggio,
there?
There's another one.
And I think that's probably what goes into my mind is they're kids of former stars in the major leagues.
Right.
And that's why they were kind of at the top of my list.
Fourth is the Rangers. Fifth, the Mariners. Sixth, the Marlins. Even though they tanked really hard, they're only sixth. Pirates 7th, and the Royals 8th, the Tigers 9th, and the Orioles 10th. Now, if you're a Royals fan, you're listening to this, and you're going, what's the point of the story? Here's the point of the story. The White Sox and the Tigers are both in the Royals division.
Yeah.
So, and I said for a while, the Tigers and the White Sox are ahead of the Royals in the rebuild, and the Royals could have been further along in the rebuild had they realized in 2016 that they really weren't in it.
Yeah.
And Dayton Moore went with his heart instead of his head, kept guys longer, didn't get anything for Volquez, didn't get anything for Morales, which maybe there wasn't any offers anyway, they weren't any good. And the Royals went down not getting anything for those guys. So they say here in this article, the Royals are above the Tigers in the pecking order because they will probably trade Whit Merrifield, which they've been saying that for 2 years now. And they've got young stars like Albert Amondesi and even and Bobby Witt Jr., which he's a few years away probably. So they're talking about there's some star material there. So they have them ahead of the Tigers, even though the Tigers started to rebuild before the Royals. The White Sox, they have ahead of the Royals. If the Royals are going to get back to the playoffs anytime soon, the Royals have to be above the White Sox and Tigers.
Absolutely.
Obviously. And they got to still catch the Indians and the Twins. Now, I think the Indians are going to catch here in the next few years because they have mortgaged the future. Although they still got a decent farm system, they've been in it to win it. And why wouldn't you? Just like the Royals were in 15. They were in it to win it, made trades. The Twins, I don't know. They're kind of up and down team. But they've really made some moves this year. They're in it. They're going for it. And I think that's going to, you know, eventually come back and bite them if they don't win it all in a few years because they have a window just like Royals did. So if you believe in the Twins have that window of about 5 years, that window has got two more years. And if you believe the Indians are going to come back to the pack, which I believe they will, because they've got Francisco Lindor, they're probably going to trade eventually. Doesn't look like they're going to sign him long term. You know, Kluber's not with the team anymore, so forth and so on.
Yeah.
Then the Indians are going to come down to earth. So then who are the next teams that are going to move to the top? Well, the Twins and the Royals were in rebuilds, and the Royals eventually rebuilt, and they made a World Series champion out of them. The Twins were rebuilding during the Royals' time when they were winning, and now the Twins won the division last year, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the White Sox, the Tigers, and the Royals, the Twins and the Indians at some point are going to go to the rebuild pile, I would think, maybe not to this extent. So if you can catch up to the Twins and the Indians, and you're above the White Sox and Tigers on the rebuild, then guess what? Division champs. So this is what you got to worry about. Not worry about the Padres if you're a Royals fan. If you look at this list, you shouldn't worry about, the Padres are number one. You shouldn't worry about the Blue Jays being number three. All you should worry about is the White Sox 2 and the Tigers are behind you and you're 8th. you got to be ahead both those teams in the rebuild. You got to make the right moves, the right free agent signings. You got to draft the right guys. You got to have the right development in the minor leagues in order to beat those teams to the punch and get to the top. So you'd be the best of those three teams. Now you got to catch the Twins and the White Indians or hope they come back down to your level, which I think they will within the next, you know, let's be honest. The Royals, when do you think they're going to compete again? When do you think they legitimately are going to compete for a division title? I would say they're at least 2 years away, if not three.
I was going to say three.
Okay, so three. Let's go with three. 3 years away. 3 years from now, do you think the Twins are at the top of the division? I'd say probably not.
I'd say
their window's closed, and they'll be rebuilding again because they won't be able to afford the great young players that they're just turning into stars. And the Indians 3 years from now, I think they might be able to reload instead of rebuild, but they're not going to be anything like they've been the last few years. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
So then it goes to, okay, are you further along than the White Sox or the Tigers in regards to your rebuilding plan? That's what you got to hope as a Royals fan is you are better than the White Sox and Tigers, and then eventually you'll catch the Indians and Twins that come back to earth a little bit, and you get better. That's the recipe to win the division and make the playoffs again. Can you be a wild card and make it? Yeah, you can. We saw that in 2014. So you clearly got to be at one of the top two teams.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Clearly,
and,
in the division.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, If you're going to expect the Royals to compete again, I think Bobby Witt has to be a part of that.
Thinking two years is a little bit aggressive.
I think, and so that's why I said three. But yeah, Mondesi's got to be a part of it. Those young guys,
pitchers.
Exactly. You've got to get Singer, Coar, any of those guys. You know, you're going to have two or three of those guys without question. And I think that's been the biggest problem in Dayton Moore's whole regime as general manager is young pitching.
Yes.
It doesn't come up.
It's not just been him. It's been the previous. Alan Baird, too.
But Baird couldn't draft the guys he wanted to sometimes.
True.
You know, Dayton Moore's been able to draft pretty much whoever he wanted to draft.
Right.
And I just don't feel like starting pitching has been developed. We saw that in 2013 when they made the trade for Shields and Davis and got rid of all those young pitchers that we kept having force fed down our throat. That's when it started. And then they got rid of Montgomery and Lamb in the next trade. And all this was shoved down our throat. These are going to be the guys. Well, they had deviated from that fast because they knew it wasn't going to work out the way they wanted it to. He wanted to have one of those pitchers up every year to get into the rotation. I remember when he started talking about that. And you still need that unless you're going to have, you know, some pieces that really, really improve that you're going to be able to trade away to get pitching like a Shields or a Davis or a Cueto or somebody like that. Again, I know Davis wasn't a starter but 1 year, but, you know, guys that I'm talking about like that, you're going to have to find either your prospects are going to have to get good and you're going to have to mortgage some of that future again, or these pitchers are going to have to develop better than the ones did in the past.
Yes.
Is what you need. I mean,
I agree. And you look at the Royals rotation right now. These are the four guys that are going to be in the rotation for sure, unless they're hurt. Brad Keller, didn't develop him. That was a Rule 5 pickup.
Yeah.
Danny Duffy, who had a spell where he was like a Cy Young candidate for about half a season, that's a guy you develop but hasn't really been the star he should have been.
No.
And he's now getting up there.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Montgomery is a retread project.
Came back.
He didn't do anything with you other than help trade to get something.
Yeah.
And Jacob Junis is the only one of those four. Well, I mean, Duffy is too. But Junis is really the bona fide most recent guy that they've actually had through the system. And he's been there certainly for, what, two, three solid years.
Yeah.
And he's basically a four starter for most good teams. And he's the Royals right now, probably number three starter.
Yeah.
So it just goes, and then who do you got after that? Jorge Lopez, had to do a trade to get him. Glenn Sparkman, okay, he's out of the organization, but he isn't the answer.
No.
So, and then a whole bunch of others where they've traded for a Jesse Hahn or this or that, and he doesn't pan out, and he gets hurt, and what was the other guy they had? Heath Philmeyer, and that didn't work out.
Yeah.
The Royals don't have it in the system, in the minor league system. They think they do now with these college pitchers, and that's what you got to hold your hope on if you're a Royals fan, that these pitchers come up at the same time, and you hit on at least a couple, as you said, then fill in like you did with Volquez and Santana over the years and Chris Young. You can fill in the gaps. And then you got some stars as position players. Salvi Perez, hopefully still playing well in two or three years. Maybe you still have Whit Merrifield. Maybe you've traded him for really good assets. Maybe prospects, whatever it may be. And then you got Jorge Soler still in his prime. And you've got Hunter Dozier in his prime. You see how we're trying to hit this window?
Oh, yeah.
That's what the Royals are trying to do. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm with you. I think the Royals are at least 2 years out. I think, more realistically, we're looking 3 years. 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, the Chiefs, before we get to Gene Cady, the Chiefs draft We're going to play the role of GM here real quick. The Chiefs have five draft picks as of now for the draft, April 23rd through the 25th. It'll be a virtual draft, so take that for what it's worth. The Chiefs have they have a first-round pick for the first time since 2017. Of course, they traded away the first-round pick last year to get Frank Clark. They have the 32nd pick in the draft, the last pick of the first round, which to me is a high second-round pick. Personally, yeah. That's how I feel about it. Round two, they're at the bottom of the draft. Round two, second to last pick, pick 63. Round three, pick 96. Which is the last pick of the third, or one of the last picks of the third round. There's compensatory picks that added to it.
Yeah.
Round four, they have a pick at 138, and round five, 177. They have no sixth or seventh round picks. So they have five picks. If they trade down, they get more picks. If they trade up, they're going to lose picks. Brett Veach has been very aggressive the last couple of years of trading up and giving away picks, which I don't know if that's a wise decision in some cases, but whatever. So the Chiefs, they have five draft picks. Round one, we'll do this real quickly, round by round. I've got my list here. Round one, assuming that the best player available on your board is at the positions you think the Chiefs need help at. Round one, pick 32, what position are you drafting? Not a particular player, because I don't have all that.
Yeah.
What position, if everything's equal and there's a great guy you have at the top of your board at every position, and pick 32 rolls around and the Chiefs are on the clock and we go to Dusty Dynas, general manager of the Chiefs, what position are you drafting? Pick 32.
I still want that hybrid linebacker.
So you're going linebacker.
If he's there and that's the position I want.
Okay.
And that's if the guy's there on my list.
Gotcha. Okay, so you're going linebacker in round one.
Yes.
All right, I'm going corner. I'm going quarter in round one. Round two, I'll switch this time. I'm going athletic linebacker who can run side to side.
Yeah.
That's round two, linebacker for me.
And
round
corner.
Two, you're going corner.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, we pretty much know what the two big needs are.
Yeah, you and I know that. So do the Chiefs. Round three, what are you doing?
Round three.
What position round three?
Round three.
I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm drafting another corner.
I mean, yeah, I was kind of thinking.
If all things are equal, I'm taking another corner. I need depth at that position, but I also need a starter probably.
Yeah. I would agree with that, yeah.
Cool with that? Okay, round four. They have five picks. Round four. I'll let you go first. What position?
Let's say if he can find a good lineman.
Okay. A guy that can play multiple positions or a specific position?
Whatever, like, probably multiple, but, you know, maybe like a, I mean, you know, Stefan Wisniewski's gone. Somebody, you know, I'd say multiple, but whatever you need.
I put offensive line center. That's what I put. A guy that can play center. If he can play other positions, great. But I want a guy that's ready to replace Austin Ryder because I'm not sold on him.
I agree with
He's undersized.
Yeah.
So we're basically on the same page.
Yeah.
Okay, your last pick, round five. Assuming you don't trade down, you're round five. What position are you drafting? All things are equal. What position are you drafting round five?
For defensive tackle.
Defensive tackle. All right.
Just in case I don't work something out.
Okay. I'm going running back. I'm going running back.
Yeah, I mean, they can use a running back. They signed another one. They got four of them, but I mean, they can use another.
Yeah, they could find if they
back.
Find a really good talent at five. I think they like their toys, and they could find a really nice shiny toy at round five. And they don't have to do that.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I understand if Chris Jones gets traded, you might need to.
I don't think the Chiefs are going to go through an entire five pick draft not picking a skill player. Basically.
I agree with you.
You know, they're going to find somebody.
Right. So you got linebacker, corner, offensive line, defensive tackle, which isn't really a skill player. I've got corner, linebacker, corner, offensive line, and running back.
Yeah.
And I will add one more thing to this. I do not believe Chris Jones will be traded. I believe he's going to play under the franchise tag.
Absolutely.
And he's already in the cap number.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming, why I say running back is I'm assuming Chris Jones will still be on the team.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not going D-tackle.
Yeah.
That's
and, you know, my mind is thinking what Brett Veach does in the future, too. And that should have been my
true.
Mind.
That's a good point.
I'm the general manager here, not
you're
Brett Veach.
Right,
but you know, I agree with his philosophy a lot of times with that, and John Dorsey's philosophy a lot of times with that, is if you think that maybe somebody's going to be playing
this year.
There's
a track record with that.
Yeah.
Where he's got a guy he drafts, and the next year they let a guy go at that position, grooming the guy they draft. That was the idea with Breland Speaks. Now, that hasn't worked.
And Chris Jones is a guy that he's going to be here. He might not teach you, but you can still learn some things from Chris Jones as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other, you know, Mike Pinnell is a veteran now. You know, he's not as good as Chris Jones, but he's there.
Xavier Williams.
You'll be able to learn from some guys, the technique, and the coaches will coach you up. So you don't have to play the first year, but you kind of get, and I don't know if a fifth round pick's the way to do that. Most of these guys have been picked earlier than that are going to slide into these roles, but.
If you could find a dominant run stuffer, take him.
Yeah.
Probably. But I'm not big on defensive tackle. I think they got enough guys to handle
it. How many of these picks do I need to trade as a general manager just to get Isaiah Simmons and forget about
it? Oh, I love that, Isaiah Simmons. Oh, my Lord, I love that.
That's
you could argue Isaiah Simmons should be the number one pick in the draft.
Oh, I know.
I love, what position does he play? He was asked. Defense.
I just play defense.
He could play offense, too. Yeah. He's from Olathe, Kansas. He's a stud, obviously. He side-to-side athletic. He makes tackles. He can cover. He can blitz. He's got it all, and he learned under Venables, so he's ready for the pros, I think. I'm with you. I love that Isaiah Simmons. The Chiefs, based on the
trade. Why do we got to be so good that we're so low we don't even
Darn it, Mahomes. Why do you have to be so good and go out and win a Super Bowl? We want Isaiah Simmons, so
Isaiah, just sign that rookie contract as short as it can be and then come back home when it's done.
Well, they talk about the top three picks in the draft, and they talk about number one, Burrow going to Cincinnati, and number two is Chase Young to the Redskins, I believe, is the second pick. And Chase Young seems to be a phenomenal talent and a can't miss. And Burrow, to me, I'm sold on Burrow. I think he's legit because he can improvise and make plays like Mahomes. And I think he can do it at the pro level. If you can do it in SEC, I think he can do it in the pro level.
Yeah.
Although it's going to take him a little bit of time because you got to get something around him in Cincinnati. But Isaiah Simmons might be the best athlete and the best player in this draft. Better than those two.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good point you bring up. The Chiefs, by the way, if they traded all their picks based on the value of every pick, the highest they can move in the first round is 16. Isaiah Simmons will not be there at 16.
We're going to have to get rid of some players to do that.
No, here's what they'll have to do. To get the Isaiah Simmons, Dusty, here's all they have to do. You with me? Trade all their picks this year and next year and move up.
Yeah.
That's all they got to do to get Isaiah Simmons. Maybe.
To be like Mike Ditka here.
Hey, Ricky Williams, let's just load it up.
Trade my whole draft for Ricky Williams.
I'm giving up everything. I'm trading everything for Herschel Walker. That sounds like a great idea. Gee, why did the Cowboys become good so quick? Because the Vikings gave them a whole bunch of players for one guy that was starting to decline, Herschel Walker. One of the worst trades in the history of the NFL. Or the greatest, one of the greatest trades, if you're looking at it as a Cowboy fan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah. Cowboys love that trade.
No doubt. No doubt. All right. That's a look at the draft coming up. We'll talk more about it closer to time. Gene Cady was our guest on September 30th, 2013. He is a College Basketball Hall of Famer, and he started his career at Beloit High School, believe it or not. And he's got some interesting stories to share. We talked with him. This was almost 7 years ago. It was right before he was going to be inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame. He knew that he was going to be, but he hadn't been inducted yet. So enjoy this rewind with Gene Cady, former head coach of Beloit and Purdue and a College Basketball Hall of Famer. And then a reminder, tomorrow at 9:30, Mark Cimino, former Smith Center product, K-State star, and NFL player for 10 seasons, will join us to talk about his career. That's coming up tomorrow at around 9:30 on the Sports Ticket. Gene Cady coached at Beloit High and, of course, going to be inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame. Coach, first of all, it is a pleasure and an honor to talk to you, and thank you so much for being on the show. How's everything going for you?
Good, good. Just got back from Oklahoma giving a speech down there at a university, so it's always good to get back close to Kansas again.
Now, I understand there was a big article in the Beloit Call that they did about some of your former players surprising you this summer. Why don't you share that story?
Well, we have a golf outing in Peru, Indiana, every year to honor my wife has passed, and use the money to send high school kids in that area to college. And lo and behold, four guys from Beloit came up there and surprised me, walked down the stage at the warm-up song from Beloit High, so it was quite a surprise and a happy time.
Can you explain what got you into coaching and coaching basketball in particular? I've heard various stories, and I can't confirm any of them.
Well, my high school coach was very into helping his players get into a profession he thought they were best suited for, and he always encouraged me to go into coaching. So I played all four sports, so he thought that I'd be able to coach, you know, any of the sports that they offered in Kansas. In those days, we'd take baseball in the summer and didn't have baseball in the spring or fall for high school, but we did have football, basketball, and track, and pretty good some of them, and Steelers drafted me, and he went out for the fourth time, so I came home and started coaching high school basketball at Beloit. It was the only job open because it was a late job opening. Bill Cornwell went to Shawnee Mission North to coach basketball, and he left Boyd, and I took his place. Bob Harrison was the principal, and they hired me.
What knowledge did you have? How much knowledge did you have about basketball before you were hired for that job?
Well, I played basketball until I was a junior in college.
Okay.
Just because you're a player doesn't mean you're a good coach. But I learned from a lot of good people, being around Tex Winter and being around people that were instrumental in my career. Up to that time, Sam Butterfield had really encouraged me when I was at Garden City when he was a high school coach there and I was in junior college. He was then the AD and basketball coach at Hutch JUCO. So I was around people that really encouraged me. Bill Hunsinger, one of the players at Larned High School that won the state tournament, Wayne Blunt, Bob Rice, all those guys were my idols. And I just, you kind of get your blood in Kansas. High school basketball is just like it is in Indiana. Once you get the state tournament, you're hooked. And that's what happened.
Gene Cady, head coach at Beloit High back 1959-1965, current assistant coach for St. John's, and coached, of course, Purdue for 25 years. And you certainly made a few stops there after Beloit, Hutchinson Junior College, Arkansas, Western Kentucky, but certainly your longest time was at Purdue. What are some of your fondest memories about Purdue?
Well, like that first class at Beloit, when we went to the state after my second or third year with Rod Wilson and all those kids, Meats and Miller and Grunwald, having the opportunity to coach those guys, and we went to the state and weren't supposed to, so that kind of set my tenure at Beloit, because if we hadn't done that, I might have been fired. So it was one of those things where that class kind of saved me.
Yeah.
Same way at Purdue, the 1984 class was picked ninth in the league, and we won the league, won the Big Ten, and that kind of saved my future there. So it's a matter of time, usually, before you get fired at certain places, and I got lucky and won at an opportune time at both places.
Did you ever think that you were going to be at Purdue for 25 years?
No. No, I didn't think, in those days, people didn't last that long, and then I didn't know if we could win or not, because, we were with Knight. Knight was at Indiana, and Al McGuire told me, you're dumb to take that job, Katie, because you'll never beat Knight. So it was one of those things where it worked out okay.
We should point out you won a gold medal in the Olympic Games in Sydney as an assistant coach for the Dream Team. What was that experience like?
Well, it was great. I mean, I was one of the assistants. Tubby Smith and Larry Brown and I were the assistants. Rudy Tomjanovich was the head coach, and we won the gold medal in Sydney, Australia in 2000. So that was a great, great feeling when you walk in that opening night, the opening ceremonies with all the other countries. So that's a unique situation. And unless you do it, you can't really explain how it feels. But that was great. Great time in my life.
And then coach a little bit there in the NBA, assistant coach with the Raptors. What's the biggest difference between the NBA and college?
Better players.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was fun. We had a good time. Toronto was a place, a special town. I love Toronto. Wayne Embry was the guy that brought me there. He's a guru in the basketball world. Wanted me to come up there and help coach defense. I had an opportunity to go for a year, and then my wife got ill, and I had to come home.
Throughout your coaching career, and we're talking to Coach Gene Cady with us tonight on the Sports Ticket, can you pinpoint a certain game, a certain victory that stands out or was the most satisfying in your career?
I think when we won the Big Ten, like I said, in 84 up at Minnesota on national television, CBS, we won at Minnesota by 1 or 2 points and tied Illinois for the championship, and they voted me CBS National Coach of the Year. So that was a special game. But like I said, it kind of got me a longer contract at Purdue and was a turning point in my career.
I know every loss sits with a coach, and you think about the losses more than the victories. Is there a particular loss that you go back and you still replay in your mind and go, gosh, I wish this would have gone differently or I would have done something differently?
Yes. When Chapman beat us, when I was at Beloit my last year, and they went on to win the state, and they beat us in the regional. That was not easy to take. But they were a good team and had a great coach, and they deserved to win, but we just weren't quite good enough. And we'd been rated number one in the state at sometimes that year because we had a good team, but it was not good enough to beat Chapman.
And you've also been a basketball analyst on TV. You have a face for TV, Coach?
Well, that was my best gig I ever had. You get paid for talking about what you think you know, and it's fun. And I got to be good friends with the analysts at Big Ten Network in Chicago. So now that was a great gig. I loved that. But then Coach Levin called, and I went to New York City.
Now, I know you're good friends with Coach Weber, Bruce Weber at Kansas State. I've heard you said put in a really good word for him to get the job at Kansas State University. Your thoughts on Coach Weber and, of course, the great job they did last year with Kansas State?
Yeah, he's a dear friend and a great coach, and one of those coaches that I cherish, because he started out with me at Western Kentucky as a GA. He went with me to Purdue and moved on up, and then became, because you know, the coach of Southern Illinois. Then was a great coach at Illinois, took him to the Final Four, the championship game, and then Kansas State. I helped him get that job, but I don't know how much I did, but at least we wanted him and they hired him, so that was great. But Bruce was, I got remarried in Hawaii with the Nike group and about a year and a half ago. And Bruce was my flower girl and best man. Tubby Smith gave my wife away, and just kept it in the basketball world. So Bruce and his wife were there with us.
Well, that's outstanding. Now, what does it mean to you, Coach? Of course, you're going to be inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame, the ceremony November 23rd in Kansas City, part of a three-day celebration. I think that's pretty cool. It's going to be in Kansas City. What does that mean to you?
Well, of course, I'm very humbled by it, and you don't do it by yourself. It's because my assistants, weight coaches, trainers, secretaries, your family, your wives, it's one of those things where a lot of people have helped me, so I've been very lucky.
You know, one thing I skipped over, and I know I got to go back, but you were drafted to play professional football. Is that right?
Yeah, as a receiver. My knee was injured at Garden City, and then I got it well my sophomore year and did okay. And then my junior year, I was okay at K-State for a while, and then I hurt it in spring practice after I came out from baseball practice and practiced fall football and didn't warm up right and hurt it again. Then I hurt it at the Colorado game my senior year. So then I went to Steelers and hurt it again. So it was a situation that hurt my knee four times and should have probably signed in baseball, but maybe I wasn't good enough for that either. But I had enjoyed my athletic career, had great coaches, enjoyed my time with all the people in Kansas. So it's been a special time for me. I've been very lucky.
What was your favorite sport? I mean, you're good at all of them, but what was your favorite sport?
I don't really have one. I think that the time at Beloit was really special because we went to the state three times and did it with guys that weren't really highly rated, but some of them make first-team All-State. But it was just a great time. It was a great opportunity to do something in my coaching career. Then to go to Kansas State and take a class under Tex Winter when I was working on my master's. He wrote his book while I was there, so I got to listen to him lecture on his book when he wrote it, The Triple Post, and he was special. Then Sam Butterfield was special, and Eddie Sutton was special. So I've had a lot of really good coaches around me. I've learned from them. You know, coaches steal stuff from other people, and I'm a pretty good thief as far as taking the material from other people and using it to my advantage.
Time for an off-the-wall question, Coach. I asked something a little bit unique in the interview towards the end, and I would be curious. I'm guessing, I can't remember in specifics, but I'm sure you do, that you may have, over the time you coach, picked up a couple of technical fouls from time to time, all right? Is there one instance where you got a technical foul, or a funny story on how you got a technical foul, or a weird way how you got a technical foul?
Not really. I got kicked out of one game in 55 years. So a lot of people thought I was kicked out a lot more than that, but I was sent out of the game at Iowa. That's the only time I was removed from the game. But I got a lot of technicals. No, there wasn't one that was special because none of them were planned. Everybody thinks that was calculated, and it wasn't. I wasn't that smart. So it's one of those things where I got technicals, and I always deserved every one I got. I probably should have had more.
What got you kicked out at Iowa?
Ripping a referee about something that was a bad call, I thought. So and I used some language that wasn't necessary, and I deserved to be kicked out.
I see. How did your team respond? Did you win that game that night?
Yes, Bruce Weber took over, and we finally got a good coach out there, and he took over. We were behind six when I left, and he took over, and we won, so it was great.
Worked out great. See, it was planned, right, Coach?
Yeah, that wasn't planned, but it worked.
Sure, absolutely. Okay, one final thing. What would you like to say to all those folks listening here in North Central Kansas and the Beloit area? What would you like to say to them right now?
Well, Rod Wilson and Bob Lambert are really been special people to me over the years as far as staying in touch, and I really appreciate their loyalty and our friendship. And just the people in that area are great because they were great fans. They were very special to me when I was at Beloit. I enjoyed my stay at Beloit. Bill Campbell was a very, very good football coach. I enjoyed time with him, Blackie Lane. Those and all the teachers I worked with were great. So the people in that part of Kansas were great. I missed the quail hunting. That was always fun. So it's just a special place to live during my young coaching years, and I was very lucky.
Well, Coach, we certainly appreciate the time. We want to wish you congratulations and congratulate you on being inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame. Once again, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you. Now, I gave my whole Hall of Fame talk, so you don't even have to come to the induction now. You heard what I had to say.
Maybe we could make it anyway. It'd be nice to see you.
Okay, thank you.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.